I had to pull out like the building plans for each of the hospitals to figure out whether they had a resource center or not sometimes. And sometimes the plan just says books.
Perfect. That's what a library is.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 132, we are talking about media we've recently enjoyed, not related to the book club. I'm Anna, and I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, usually, except that at this moment, I am in Fairbanks, Alaska, USA.
But will not be there when this episode comes out.
That's actually true. This is very confusing. What is time and place?
My name is Matthew. I'm also a librarian currently in Fairbanks, Alaska, USA, though also will not be there when this episode comes out.
My name is Megan. I'm an archivist in the National Capital Region of Canada, and I'm not planning on going more than 20 kilometers away from my place of residence at this moment.
Are you saying that the Olympics haven't encouraged you to go on really long bicycle rides, Megan?
No, I don't watch cycling as a sport generally.
Oh.
Huh. My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
So how come you don't watch cycling as a sport usually?
No. First announcements.
Oh, fine.
It's not like you couldn't just edit it.
No, impossible. Impossible.
Okay.
RJ, go first.
Sure. So as with all of our recent episodes, in the show notes for this episode, you will find a book list of books by authors of color. And specifically for this one, since this is not a genre episode, we're doing a retroactive list for a genre we have covered in the past on the show. You'll find the book list for historical fantasy.
I think that might be a popular list with some folks.
Perhaps.
Announcement number two. I was recently on another podcast again, which is the Library Punk podcast. I cannot remember what episode it is, but it is an episode about nonfiction comics and graphic novels in libraries. So if you want to hear me talk more about comics than I always do, you can check that out. And again, if you want to hear me talk even more about comics specifically, I will be on an upcoming webinar panel thing. I am in the Manga and Libraries Defending the Collection webinar, which will be on Monday, August 23rd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And there'll be a link in the show notes for how you can register to watch that live, and it will also be available on YouTube afterwards.
Cool. Who's putting together the panel?
It's being put together by the American Library Association Graphic Novel and Comics Roundtable and the New York City School Library Association, I think, is the other group.
Huh.
So it's a whole bunch of library folks talking about manga. It's a series. It's a whole series. I think this is like the fifth or sixth in this series about adding manga and having manga in your library collection. So I'll be talking partially in my role as a library and education outreach person for the Manga Classics line of comics, but also just as a person.
Will you tell people not to put Watchmen in their young adult collection?
No, because it's a manga-specific panel. Sorry.
Oh, yes.
But also, don't put Watchmen in your YA collection.
He does that in his free time. Not job-related.
Okay, I legitimately, like, the library system in question, RJ,
mm-hmm.
I have gone and pulled a Vertigo title out of their children's section.
Oh, no.
Not just YA, their children's section in the past. So someone there isn't looking at the comics.
That was actually, like, labeled and cataloged to be in children's?
Yes, literally cataloged to be in the children's section.
That's no good.
It was a Vertigo comic called The Children's Crusade. So clearly it is for children.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, something happened.
Vertigo Comics being an imprint of adult-oriented, mature readers, 18+, not porn, but not for children or teenagers comics.
Don't we have another announcement? Which book won?
Oh, yeah. Good idea.
That was supposed to be the number one announcement, and I forgot entirely. There were so many other announcements. Usually, we don't have that many. Pirina, so you all voted, or some of you voted, 10% of you voted in the poll to decide which book we would read. And Piranesi by Susanna Clarke won by one vote. So next time, if you really didn't want us to read that book, well, it is entirely your fault.
If you didn't vote.
Yes, if you did not vote. Or I guess if you voted for the wrong book. Who can say? So that will be the, we'll be reading and discussing that for an episode that will be out in September.
Yay!
I'm sure our little podcast will massively move the needle on book sales for this book by encouraging everybody to buy a copy and read along and or borrow it from your library.
Definitely. It's such a minor work.
That unknown author, Susanna Clarke.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, we'd never get an audience.
No. None of us have been waiting for like a decade for her to put out something else.
Yeah. Nope. Not been an issue.
Oh boy, we really got to strategize next year so that Megan or Anna can win the.
Man, I got close. I feel good about that.
I did all sorts of strategy work, and then it all fell apart at the last minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas I did no work whatsoever this year.
It's true, actually. You really just like put that one and only book down on the list very early, and were like, "This one counts."
Like last time I did it. I like went and looked at everyone's Goodreads accounts and like did like data analysis before I won. When I won 2 years ago, so
you're saying there's no rhyme or reason to people's preferences?
No, there clearly is not.
Maybe next time we should ask people to justify which one they want us to read.
Just make everyone who votes write a short paragraph.
Yes, write a short paragraph justifying why.
Please write a short persuasive essay.
And we'll grade all of them. Yeah, totally.
No thanks.
Well, then there'll definitely be less votes.
Well, maybe we can get some of those people who might vote multiple times to not do that under that condition.
I don't think anyone voted multiple times this year.
No, I think we were in the clear this year.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I guess that means it's time to get going. Who's going first? I have so many cheats.
You have so many cheats?
Yes.
Anna has like 7 things to talk about, I think, instead of 3.
I have 5.
I think that means you go first, Anna.
Yeah, you go first if you have the most things.
I have 5, but I'm going to do them in sets. Mm-hmm. 2 sets of 2 and 1 individual thing. So I will go ahead and go first. So my first one is a podcast that's called Maintenance Phase. And the hosts are Michael Hobbs, who's a Huffington Post like reporter, editor. I'm not exactly, can't remember which. And Aubrey Gordon, who wrote under the pseudonym Your Fat Friend. And Michael Hobbs is also, co-hosts the podcast. What's the other podcast name? You're Wrong About, with Sarah Marshall. And I've listened to that one as well, but I really like the Maintenance Phase one, for whatever reason, is just hitting the right point for me. It is a, basically a health and wellness podcast, but from the skeptics and criticism side. It's looking at health and wellness trends, both current and in the past. A lot of them are historical trends. And it's sort of like pulling apart how culturally they happen and take off and what it means and the impact it has on people personally and how our narratives about health and wellness are so messed up and also so tied up in a lot of conspiracy thinking. Like that was one of the episodes that first got me into it, was an episode tying health and wellness to the QAnon, like conspiracy thinking process. Like how do you end up, how they're similar with patterns of thinking. But they're breaking down like the patterns of thinking and the way that people get into these situations. And they're very, very respectful about it. And they will actually talk about like, look, this is a thing that we don't think actually does anything, but like on a, you know, scientifically speaking level. But if it makes you feel good or personally, or it makes you feel like you, you know, just mentally or emotionally are feeling more comfortable by doing this thing, then do it because it's not going to harm you. Versus this is a thing that like actually will cause harm
and you need to possibly find ways to get out of this cycle if you are stuck in this cycle, because it could very well be doing harm to you or to others around you. So they will talk about like the difference between that, because they're very respectful of the fact that a lot of our health and wellness stuff is tied up in very personal and emotional and mental health related things. And it's tied up in a lot of really complicated social narratives that we don't always have like the ability to consciously control how those impact us. So anyways, I have really enjoyed it. I actually listened to a bunch of these episodes on repeat while I was feeling really sick. So seems thematically appropriate. And so they were really nice. Their dynamics is extremely good. They're very funny. And they have a good structure to how they're doing this that's not overly structured, but also like really does like move things along very quickly. And they really do tell narratives and tales around these things. Like they pick all sorts of different interesting topics from Weight Watchers to various gurus and like Goop products and stuff like that. Like they talk about all of these different things, and each episode has one of these they focus on, and one of them has done a bunch of research and then presents it to the other. And yeah, and they just have a nice bantery dynamic around it. So that's Maintenance Phase as a podcast to be found on whatever your podcast provider of choice is.
Well, speaking of doing harm to those around you.
Oh, dear.
God. I don't actually have a segue there, but I thought that would be a really great one.
Making me nervous. I'm sitting next to you.
Not the segue that causes the most excitement to hear what comes next.
Yeah, a little discomfort while sitting next to him in that segment.
It doesn't lead to anything.
Or segue. Well, were you going to do yours?
I guess I can.
You started. You got to keep going. You can't just like this hanging. I don't care if it was a joke.
Okay. I will mention two manga series that I've read and enjoyed recently. One is Spy X Family by Tatsuya Endo. Or potentially, I've heard that the X's in titles of Japanese things are not pronounced. So, but I don't know. So anyway, so this is a comedy series about a guy who is a spy in a, it's like a city, it's kind of like Cold War-esque world. So he's a spy in the city and he has to go undercover and get close to this other person, which involves him getting a fake family together so he can get a child into this private school so he can get close to the parent of another child that is there. And so he ends up getting a fake wife who is actually an assassin. And a child who is a psychic, and neither parent realizes that the other is not normal. But the child realizes that both of their parents are like not normal, but also doesn't want to tell anybody because they don't want to go back to the orphanage. And it's very funny and weird. And it's just very entertaining. It's just, yeah, it's just very well done for what it is. I felt the art is good. If that sounds appealing to you, read it. If not, then don't, I guess. the other one is Witch Hat Atelier, which is another one that like nobody needs to know about this. If you haven't, you know, if you know about it, you're probably already reading it, by Kemome Shirahama. And this is a beautifully illustrated comic about like junior witches in training. I read volumes 5 to 7 to catch up to the series, and it's just really good. It's in a world where there are lots of witches, which are gender non-specific, which I really enjoy. And there's like evil witches that have a different type of hat. I think they're the brimless ones. I can't remember exactly.
I'm sold.
Perfect. And they want to do like magic that is banned. They're trying to convert one of the junior witches to their side. And it's just really engaging, you know? It's just a really well done comic. It's about witches and it's really nicely illustrated. I'm so good at describing comics today.
Your description juice just runs out partway through. You start strong and then description juice just...
It's like, it also like, I really like the way they use magic in the world, which is, I think, really interesting. It's all about like calligraphy, basically. But they need to keep that secret from everybody because they don't want people to know that anybody can actually do magic if they try. So there's lots of secret stuff. And there's a kind of angsty witch who wants to be a librarian, who I like a lot. Mm-hmm.
That tracks. That makes sense.
I liked her before I knew she wanted to be a librarian, though. So that was just the, like, you know, the cherry on top.
I don't have a good segue, RJ, do you?
Neither of you has witch-related media to talk about? My goodness.
Wait, let me look. No, I don't have any witches.
Well, speaking of women...
Witches were non-gender specific, though.
Oh, dang it.
Just go. We don't need a segue.
Yeah, go. You don't have to make segues.
Okay, so one of the reasons I haven't been reading a whole lot in the last couple months is I caught a sports watching bug, and the sport that I started watching was...
Can we try to guess?
Sure, guess.
Weightlifting.
So it's a new sport.
Oh.
I looked at the show notes, so I got a spoiler.
A new sport? How am I supposed to know what new sports are out there these days?
I meant new to me.
Oh.
Not something that I, you know... made reference to before, probably.
Oh, okay. No, that's too bad because, like, the new sport that I've recently learned about is because Matthew's all obsessed with this Madison cycling thing.
So dumb.
What?
Okay, Madison cycling is a form of track cycling, which is based on the six-day races that they used to have, which were the most laps you can do in 6 days.
Yeah.
So it's a partner race, and they only take an hour now, but there's two of you, you have a team, and you're cycling around the track. But only one of you counts at a time. And so every couple of laps, you'll slingshot your partner so that they're the active participant, which means like you grab them by the hand and then like push them forward. You throw them forward so they get this little speed burst.
Cool.
And people fall over like all the time.
But you don't have to like pass on the star cap or anything like that, like they do in roller derby.
Yeah, no, you don't have to pass anything. You just slingshot this teammate. But there's like 16 teams going at a time.
Oh my gosh.
So it's just in a crowded track full of teams all attempting to do this maneuver over and over again around each other while they go really, really, really fast.
Yeah.
I believe it is a little bit like roller derby in that like you want to try to lap the other teams, though that doesn't happen that often.
Okay. To make points?
Yeah, to get points. It's points-based. But you also get points for, like, winning sprints.
Yeah, that's what the original six-day races were like. Like, there were two people because you couldn't ride your bike 24 hours a day.
Well, they tried that as well.
Yeah, but people kept falling over. And then you'd make your money off of they'd have sprints.
Yep.
So that people would come and bet on you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's cool. That was Madison cycling?
So ridiculous. Yes.
No, so the sport I got kind of obsessed with is women's basketball, because every once in a while I watch a sport on a streaming service and I get super cranky that there's no women's sports, and the service had a women's basketball game, so I watched it and I was like, oh, this is actually very interesting and cool. So I got a season's pass to the streamed version of the WNBA. And I can't necessarily watch everything live, but because I don't have like a team that I'm following, I'd like to watch everybody so I can root for like either the shortest or the tallest player on the team, whoever looks like most fun to root for. So I was watching all of them sort of on a delay, but they're not playing during the Olympics. So I watched a little bit of the Olympics, but complicated feelings about the Olympics.
Yes.
And one of the nice things for me is that my partner is into basketball, so he can explain like all the fouling rules and what's going on when they, you know, how they strategically use timeouts at the very like last 2 minutes of the game. It's a little bit like they play for a solid, I don't know, 30-35 minutes, because the whole game is like 4 10-minute periods, and then like the last couple minutes, even though it looks like it's not that close because it's, you know, one team is up 8 or something like that, the shenanigans around like the last 2 minutes can get, I don't know how I feel about it necessarily, because sometimes it's seems a little silly and it's less about playing the game and more about like how you put together your timeouts or whatever, but it's been a lot of fun. So I've been really appreciating that.
I guess there's no team near you that you can like pick as your... the one that you support.
No, but I don't think, like, for a lot of people, I don't think the team they support is necessarily the town that they're in, because it's not like, there's only 8 teams, I think.
Oh, okay.
So for a lot of people, like, you're rooting for a team that's not in your city, or you don't have a team in your city anymore. But yeah, there's a lot of, like, the whole, like, memorizing who played for who and when and the histories of the different teams. Because this year is the 25th anniversary of the WNBA, so they were doing a lot of, like, alumni stuff and who scored the most goals when kind of thing.
Wait, hold on. The most goals? Do I not understand basketball at all?
Points? Baskets?
Peaches?
Points, yeah. So there's the three-pointers.
Yeah, but that kind of thing. It's interesting, but not exactly why I like to watch the game. It's not contact, but there's a lot of rules around contact. So it's less like throwing someone over and more being more skilled and knowing the rules of the game well enough that you can get the most points, I guess.
Have we ever talked about a sport in this podcast before?
We've talked about cycling before.
But not as a sport.
Is that different from how we just talked about, like, the six-day races and stuff?
I don't know.
Because sport is always entertainment in this weird kind of way, right?
I feel like doing a thing is different than watching a thing. Oh, that's the time limit for sports conversations. RJ!
Very good. We used up our allotted sports time. Great. So what I'm talking about is not a sport, but it is a competition. Huh? Hey? it's also not the Olympics. I'm going to talk about a television show. And I feel like I've mentioned before in these media episodes, these episodes where we talk about other media that we consume, not for the podcast. I've mentioned that I don't really watch a lot of TV shows. I watch a lot of YouTube. And I'm watching a TV show. In fact, I am watching it so hard that I have watched like 4 seasons of it in the last 2 weeks.
Mm.
It's a British TV show, so they've been like 5 to 8 episodes in each season. But for me, it's still a lot of watching a TV show in order.
RJ, are you okay? Is everything going all right?
Is anyone okay?
Great question. No, they are, I mean, they're just really long YouTube videos is what they are, because this is a show that is hosted on YouTube. And that is, I think, how I found it, was that the algorithm was recommending it to me. In fact, I think it started recommending it to me like a year or so ago, and I saw it and I had heard a little bit about it, and I was kind of resentful of the fact that I knew that I would like it. I get mad at them when the algorithm's like, right. When it gives me something that I've like given it no related content about, but I'm like, oh, I will like this. And I'm so mad that you figured that out.
Same.
I loathe some of the music algorithms for like knowing exactly what I'll enjoy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I put off watching it for the longest time, but I stopped playing Overwatch this month because of reasons that you'll find. I think I'll put in the article links what's going on with the Blizzard team. It's very bad.
Oof.
Yeah. So I've got a bunch of free time in my daily routine and have been watching the show Taskmaster. This is a UK comedy game show about, boy, I know, I never, it's so, it's a really, like, funny and pretty simple show, but I'm never sure how to start describing it. So it is hosted by Greg Davies, who is the titular Taskmaster, and he's a comedian, but he's also this very sort of imposing and sort of egotistical character of a figure.
He's very tall.
He's very tall. He's extremely tall. Him and his assistant, Little Alex Horn, who is called Little Alex Horn.
despite also being fairly tall, to be honest.
Yeah, but he's a mere 6 feet. So he's very little next to Greg. Who, I love Alex Horn. He is delightfully straight-faced and helpful. No matter what ludicrous situation he's put in on the show.
He's also the creator.
He is, yeah. It is his brainchild, is that the term? He was the creative driving force behind it. But he plays a very sort of I don't want to say like he's not like a background character by any means, but as much as he is like the driving creative force on the show, on screen, he is just very sort of quiet and helpful.
he kind of the straight man of the show?
He's kind of the straight man. He's almost subservient in a way.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the challenges involve him getting put into uncomfortable and unpleasant situations. Getting ahead of myself. So the concept of the show, those two are the hosts, and there's a panel of comedians who are the contestants throughout the season. They're the same comedians, and they have done a series of tasks that were demanded by the taskmaster months before. They recorded them, and then on the show they review the footage and score points. And the tasks that they're given are challenges that draw on like a variety of skills, very rarely athletic skill, but sometimes it's helpful. And in these tasks, they're rewarded for coming up with creative solutions. So a lot of the time, like lateral thinking and approaching things from a different angle can be really helpful. But it also occasionally, like, people go really astray of what the challenge was and get disqualified. And a lot of the fun of the show, I've been watching it with my partner, and a lot of the fun is, like, hearing the challenge and then, like, pausing it before we see what the contestants do and talk about, like, how we would tackle it. And yes, a lot of them are timed. A lot of times it is like whoever does something fastest gets the most points, or sometimes it is whoever does something best within a very short time limit, or sometimes the time limit is very long. Like there have been a few times where the challenge was like, buy the taskmaster the best gift. You have 10 weeks. And people, one person got his name tattooed on himself. He won. Spoilers for Taskmaster. But I wrote down a few examples of challenges. Cook the best meal using ingredients from every letter of the alphabet. Make this coconut look like a businessman. Destroy this cake in the most beautiful way possible. Make this Swedish person blush.
Oh my gosh.
And for an example of like the lateral thinking thing, there was one that was paint a portrait of the taskmaster on this easel. Only the paint and paintbrushes may touch the red carpet under the easel. And the easel is sitting on this carpet that is like a 9-foot diameter circle. So they can't actually reach the easel from not standing on it. And so They watch the contestants do it, and the first few people, like, you know, get like a broom and a stick and like tape them together and create this like super long paintbrush. And then you watch the next contestant take one of the paintbrushes and just flip the carpet over enough times that they can walk right up to the easel. It's a delightful show. And in every episode, they're competing for prizes that they have brought in. So one of the challenges that they get points on is like whoever brought the best prize according to the theme. And the themes can be like the most unique item in, or unique. I think maybe they've done unique, but it's better when it's more specific. The most impressive item in your home.
I think heaviest was one.
The heaviest item that'll fit in a shoebox. The best sheep-related item.
Ooh.
The best celebrity memorabilia, the best dinner guest was one, where they had to fly in their best dinner guest. Yeah, it's a great show, and as I mentioned, it's from the UK on, I think, I don't know what network it was on. I think it started on one network and might have moved, but regardless, it doesn't have a US distributor, and so all of the episodes are just on YouTube on the Taskmaster channel, which is great. Just my preferred way to watch a thing. So even if you don't have Netflix or anything, you can go watch Taskmaster right now. Check it out.
I watched a bunch of it last year. It's a very enjoyable show and very easy to waste a lot of time watching it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I actually do have a transition there because one of mine is a YouTube channel.
Not something about tasks.
Not about tasks, no. Although I guess it applies to the second section. So this is a two-parter. First, it's about a YouTube channel, and then it's about something that I started doing because of this YouTube channel, which does relate to tasks significantly. So the YouTube channel is called Let's Game It Out. And it is a narrator who's named Josh. You never see this person. There used to be two of them, which is why it used to be a Letts, but now the Letts is sort of a misnomer, but now it's just Josh. And they are playing various games in ways that intentionally push the game to its limits or break it in whatever ways they can manage to do so. So a lot of these games are kind of smaller games, and a lot of them are like building things games or simulation games. So they're like building a zoo, or they're playing as if they're trying to make a medieval tavern or stuff like that in these games. And then they basically try to figure out, like, how can they, for instance, like, get all the points they need to go up levels while doing something really stupid and ridiculous repeatedly over and over and over again? Or how can they force all of the NPCs to, like, enter through one room and then walk through a giant maze in order to get to whatever the thing is that they need?
Can I shoplift everything from this store?
So this is kind of about tasks.
Kind of.
Kind of tasks they set for themselves.
Yeah. That, like, their basic task is just, like, play the game wrong as possible. Try to, like, they frequently set a kind of pseudo goal for themselves to, like, break the frame rate on the game as they're doing it. It's so, and then they're very dry. Like, most of the time their narration is kind of not laughing at, like, they might laugh sometimes in very small ways, but a lot of the time they're just kind of dryly pointing out the ridiculousness of things that are happening.
I love it. Like, it's kind of an ongoing thing where they'll like make something and then they're like, is there a limit on how many of these I can make?
And then
hard cut to, there is no limit on how many of these I can make.
Then there's a black screen with like 45 minutes later and then, right? Or like sometimes they're like, so it wouldn't take too long to make 20,000 of these, would it? And then it's like 6 days of playing later. So there's that kind of stuff going on. They also have an ongoing thing where they have like, they name non-playable characters Grace over and over again, and then poor Grace will just get the true butt end of everything. So they're very funny, and they're nice for a person who doesn't really play games that much and just enjoys watching people sort of explore the broken ways that games don't always work. A lot of the games are actually, this is like their beta, they're not out yet, so they get early keys to access the game, so they're not fully functional anyways, like there's bugs in them anyways, and they acknowledge that in there. They'll say, like, you know, they recognize that this is not a full production game at this point, you know, but it's good press for games because I ended up going out and buying a game based on watching them playing it and thinking it looked like kind of an interesting game and the kind of games that I would like to play. So I've been playing a ton of a game called Oxygen Not Included, which is about, like, you are trying to set up a colony on another planet, but something went wrong. And instead of landing on the surface of the planet, you've landed, like, somewhere far underneath the surface. It's supposed to be an abandoned planet, but there are things clearly out of place that don't make sense. And you are given what's called duplicates and a little transporter that will send you more duplicates or from which you can select certain supplies. And then you have to just go around and, like, dig and mine and make enough oxygen and just survive. It's a survival sort of thing going on here. Now, I've only played it so far in, like, the easiest mode. I'm not playing it on survival mode whatsoever. But I have realized this entire game is basically just, like, keep people alive management, the game. Like, it's like being a manager, but instead of just, like, trying to accomplish a job, you are, like, trying to keep people from dying a job. Like,
it's like, imagine, like, a 2D version of The Sims in which you, like, have to make them build machines that create oxygen and food and bathrooms.
Yeah, there's a lot of bathroom issues. The first time I played, I could not figure out the bathroom situation properly. There was a lot of them having to clean up pee. They're very cute too, like, and they don't actually talk. They just when they look like they're talking, they just put little, like, icons up on the screen to each other, and so they have back and forth little icon conversations, which are kind of cute. So it's very much like there's a lot of tasks that you're constantly having to set and solve and issues going on. It's a lot of problem solving with these things, but it's cute and it's very it, like the problems never end. So you get drawn into continually trying to problem solve the next issue that's coming and figure out how to keep going and keep them alive. Because if you just stay there, they're going to run out of supplies and like they only have these tiny little supply packs that get sent that really only have one thing per supply pack, and it's not very useful most of the time. Plus the things that are all around them that they dig and mine for and find, or they can farm for and stuff like that. So like, you can't just sit there and not keep moving. You have to keep moving. But every time you move, it extends like how far your oxygen has to go, which means you need more oxygen, which means you need more power, which means you also need more algae in order to produce the oxygen, or you need to start a carbon skimmer. And then you got to deal with the polluted water that's created from that. And like everything connects to everything else. There's also, it's really dense with all sorts of different layered menus and options and things. So it took so much energy just to like figure out how to get it going. But that was also fun because like there's all these little options and I'm like trying to track them all and little alerts are going off and I'm like, oh, attention here, attention there. Oh, wait, that one's dying. Oh, wait, that one's peed everywhere. Oh, that one's like.
What platform is this on? Did you say?
It's a PC game. So I got it through Steam personally.
Okay.
So yeah, that's how I'm playing it. Yeah, so anyways, that was called, so the YouTube channel was called Let's Game It Out, and the game that I started playing is called Oxygen Not Included.
That sounds really cute.
I think one of the things about Let's Game It Out that makes it so appealing is that the person that runs it, like, spends a lot of time learning how to play the game well. They're playing it wrong, but they know the best way to play it wrong is kind of what it comes down to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, they you could kind of learn how to play the game from watching them play it totally wrong. Like,
okay, I'll go on to another YouTube and game-related thing. Recently, Magic the Gathering released a Dungeons & Dragons theme set.
Yes, they did.
Called, uh-oh. And the people in the Loading Ready Run comedy and gaming streaming group did a themed Dungeons & Dragons one-shot game. Which was a Dungeons & Dragons X Magic one-shot adventure. That's just what it's called. And it's only about an hour long, so you don't have to commit that much. And in it, they used Magic the Gathering cards as their spells. So they're all playing magic casters, and their spells, they shuffled them, the decks. And they're in like a wild magic area, and so whenever they try to cast a spell, it goes wrong. And they flip over whatever card it is, and that's the spell that actually happened. It's very funny. I really enjoyed it. And I think if anyone is looking for like Dungeons and Dragons and other role-playing game podcasts and streams are very popular, but getting into them can be really difficult because they're all like, oh yeah, it's part like, you know, there's like 4 hours of content every week and they've been doing this for 3 years. So this is really easy to get into because it's a one shot and it's not that long. So you don't need to know anything going into it. But I thought it was really great.
Oh, it's me now. So my next thing is, I think it's a thing I'm doing to myself. I'm going to call it my own random task-based project. So on Twitter, a library director named Christian Larsen, who works in Denmark, was like, hey, Tour de Libraries this July, which is based off of Tour de France, the big cycling event that happens in France every year. Take as many stages as you want, go visit a whole bunch of public libraries. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really cool. I could do that. And then I was like, ooh, I could make a map of all the public libraries in the national capital region in that which I live in. And then I was like, no, I could make a map of all of the libraries in the national capital region. So I pull out all the public libraries, I pull out all the academic libraries. I noticed that a lot of museums have reference libraries. Somebody told me one of the government libraries that you can visit. Then we got hospital libraries, which I had to pull out like the building plans for each of the hospitals to figure out whether they had a resource center or not sometimes. And sometimes the plan just says books.
Perfect. That's what a library is.
And I went pretty broad with my definition. I've got some tool libraries on there. I've got membership libraries, like there's a language learning a center called Alliance Française that has a médiathèque, which you can borrow like books or videos or whatever. There's different community libraries like that. And so once I'd plotted out all of the libraries for which I could find reference to online, I was like, oh yeah, that book exchange thing. I could start putting that on. No, that's a little bit silly, Megan. Well, what else am I doing with my time? So I did go do a couple bike rides to a couple of different libraries that I don't normally go to. So, and along the way, I see all these extra little book exchange libraries. These could be like actually registered with the Free Little Library Nonprofit Corporation. I found more on the map. And then I found someone else had set up a series of urban book exchange libraries under Bibliothèque Itinérante, which is like, I guess, movable libraries. But the website is down, so you can't look up their particular list. But I've noticed quite a few of the book exchange boxes that you see outside of people's home does have the little, they have a little thing on it that says they're part of that thing. So I have a Google map of many, many different types of libraries. And I find it incredibly soothing to occasionally go and work on it, decide on what the little icons are going to be like, which colors they're going to be. Sometimes, you know, if you're lucky, you can do a little Google Street View and notice a new book exchange library. Although occasionally I notice that the Google Street View is from like 2009, so...
Mm-hmm.
I imagine I will never have enough time to bike or walk every single road in my area to figure out whether they've got a book exchange or not, but it's keeping me busy.
Can people access this map?
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. The only frustrating thing is that I can't, like, pull it up with the bicycle routes like a normal Google map, or, like, somehow access it while being on the regular Google Maps so that I can plot my bicycle routes better. But
I'm looking at it. It's lovely. It's a lot. It's a lot. It seems like a big project.
It's a lot. Part of why it looks so messy is because both Gatineau and Ottawa, which is the two municipalities that make up the National Capital Region, have been amalgamated from a couple of different outlying municipalities.
Mm.
And so their public library reach, Ottawa especially, is just like ridiculous large compared to the less smaller municipal libraries I was used to in Vancouver, for example, which is, it's got, you know, four or five different municipal library systems where, say, Ottawa's got one that has to service that whole area.
I'm going to talk about something else on YouTube. not the world's best segue, but we don't need segues. I have been watching a couple of musicals on YouTube. This is also something that kind of came to me from the algorithm. There is a YouTube channel called Bardic Inspiration, which is not the thing I'm recommending, but I'll throw a link to that in the like links list below the media we're talking about list. Bardic Inspiration, which just posts like short clips from musicals with captions that like relate them to D&D. So, for example, the title will be When You Roll a Natural 20 on Stealth, and it's the clip from Jesus Christ Superstar of Pontius Pilate saying, "Fools, you have no perception."
Nice.
But I was enjoying those clips, and they started doing clips from the Star Kid musicals, and they are a like small theater production company that is best known for the Harry Potter musicals that took off online around like 2010, a while ago. A very Potter musical, and then they released a few more Harry Potter parody musicals, which I attempted to watch at the time, but YouTube was very different then. So, like, the video and audio quality on those early productions were not that good, and I believe they had to be broken up into like 20 different parts.
Yeah.
You couldn't just put like 2 hours of a video onto YouTube unless you had like, you know, I don't even know if they allowed it. I was going to say unless you had like an extremely advanced computer that could handle that. But yeah, they might not have even allowed videos to be that long at that point. But times have changed, and so now it's very easy for them to upload their, probably not very easy, but, you know, much easier for them to upload a full, like, 2.5 hour musical onto YouTube. And they've made a bunch in the years since I stopped thinking about them. And so a friend who I had tried to watch the Harry Potter ones with back in the day, I was watching a bunch of clips, like watching the clips from Bardic Inspiration, then led YouTube to recommend me other clips from these musicals. And so I started watching those and was like, man, I kind of do want to watch these shows now. And I have been watching a few of them with a friend. Specifically, the two that I've watched in the past couple weeks are the ones that are set in the Hatchetfield universe. So this is kind of a high concept. They've produced, oh god, I'm bedeviled by cats. There's just a cat walking all over me as I'm trying to talk. They produced two musicals and they planned on a third that was supposed to be out last year that obviously didn't happen. Two musicals set in Hatchetfield, and they're both horror musicals, and they seem to be set in alternate universes because spoiler alert for both musicals, the world ends at the end of both musicals, and presumably it will in the next one as well, but we don't know because it hasn't come out. Those musicals are The Guy Who Didn't Like Musicals and Black Friday. And Black Friday really sounds like specifically geared towards me and maybe a few of you. It is
about holiday music.
Yeah, so it is Christmas themed. It is set on Black Friday, on the day after Thanksgiving, at a shopping mall, and there's a lot of Christmas content, and it is also like an eldritch horror. It is about the new toy Tickle Me Wiggly, which is very clearly a Cthulhu reference in its appearance.
A Cthulhu elbow crossover?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. What if Cthulhu was trying to enter our world by getting people to worship it via a popular Christmas toy?
Totally.
Yeah, and it's There's a lot of weird lore. Like, they didn't release the third musical last year, but instead they released a series of short films set in the Hatchetfield universe that really, like, rounded out, like, who the elder gods are in this world. And, like, there's obviously alternate dimensions happening, and it's just very, I don't know. It's quite the project. Like, their earlier musicals were kind of, like, I am going to watch one this week with my aforementioned friend that is Twisted, which is their Aladdin parody musical that is also a Wicked parody musical. So it's what Aladdin, but what if Jafar was the hero the whole time? that kind of thing. And so now they have this very like deep lore horror eldritch universe going on, which is intriguing. And I mean, the music is pretty good. I've had a lot of the music stuck in my head over the last couple of weeks. And I think that's all I will say about that. So the two musicals are The Guy Who Didn't Like Musicals, which is about what it says in the title, but also about a zombie apocalypse, more or less. And Black Friday, which is about Christmas, but also it is about Cthulhu. But his name is Wiggly.
So, RJ, should we look forward to an episode of your other podcast, Hark, talking about the music from this musical?
I think there's really only, well, there might be a few songs that qualify, because not a lot of them are Christmas songs. There is one song that will probably qualify that we could do, which is in the, to open act two, like it's mentioned in the first act, like there's characters trying to go to the movie theater that's in the mall, and the movie they're going to see is Santa Claus is Going to High School. And act two opens by showing us scenes from the movie Santa Claus is Going to High School. So there's a musical number about Santa Claus as a high school student. So we could do that one.
I look forward to hearing you talk about it.
All right.
Speed round.
Yep. So I have two books I want to briefly mention. Both of these I read way back around the same time that we recorded our last one of these. So like my memory of these is a little fuzzy. But they were both books I enjoyed. The first one, Can't Even, How Millennials Became the Burnout Generation by Anne Helen Petersons. I'm not going to spend too much time on this one because I feel like this one's got a fair amount of notice. It is not going to be for everybody. There's lots of critiques of it. Many of them are plenty valid, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. It hit the right nerve. I mean, the book, the whole concept of the book hits a significant nerve for a lot of people. It is definitely focused on a very particular time and place and class and et cetera of person. So it's a pretty middle class and to some degree white focused, discussion. And it does, of course, adopt the framework of generations, which on the whole, I'm not particularly sold on this framework of generations that we like to do. But the concept of burnout and exploring the way that that impacts us currently in our lives right now, I think is really worth exploring in a lot of ways. And this kind of covers a lot of ground. Some sections of it are a little slower than others. So there are a couple of sections you might have to kind of push a little through, but the last part of it, if you can push through some earlier things, I think the last part is really worthwhile for exploring burnout and its impact on our kind of current lives right now. So that's the first one. The other book that I want to talk about is called Having and Being Had by Eula Biss. This book is really hard for me to describe, but it's basically a kind of a how we relate to consumption and labor and money in our modern world, with a strong recognition that this person is coming at it from their personal experiences and their life, which is a very white, well-educated, middle-class life. It's from a very specific perspective, but also this, so Eula Biss wrote one of my favorite books last year that I read. I think it was last year I read it, on immunity. And the structure is very similar for this one, where it's very short chapters. The writing is very poetic and it's very beautiful. It was a almost meditative experience reading this that also really got me thinking about a lot of aspects of my life. Probably just in terms of the quality of writing, just some of the best stuff that I've read recently. And comes at the look at consumerism and labor and economics and how we value what we produce in the world and why we value it that way and what the problems are with that from a very interesting perspective that isn't like, this is not a nonfiction book where you're going to get all the facts presented and laid out in a very logical way. You're going to get a very poetic, personal, and emotional as well as factual look at these topics. So that's Having and Being Had by Eula Biss.
My turn to talk about a book. I read 19 Ways of Looking at Wang Wei by Elliot Weinberger, which is a book about translation of poetry. And I think if anyone is interested in how things are translated and the process of translation, you should definitely read this book. It's relatively small and it takes one 4-line poem and just does all of these different translations and talks about like why those decisions were made and like what the author thinks of as, the good points and bad points of it. And there's a newer edition that like has even more translations that came out since the original version. And I think it's just a really fascinating book and really kind of shows you how difficult translation is, especially from languages that are very different from English.
Heck yeah. And if you like that, there's also This Little Art by Kate Briggs, which discusses, it's not the same because it's not a 4-line section, but it does similar kind of work over a French translation. I also, for my thing, picked a book. I considered cheating since Anna already cheated on how many books, but this is supposed to be a speed round, so I'll put the other two books that I really enjoyed in the show notes. So the one I want to talk about is called Fever Dream by Samantha Schweblin. It is a Spanish translation. The translator is Megan McDowell. It was originally written in 2014 and the translation came out in 2017. And this is kind of like, I feel like it falls a little bit into our psychological horror a little bit, and also sort of unsettling. You're not sure what's happening, and it was such a fast read. I was surprised that it's almost 200 pages. I just like gulped it down. And the central character, Amanda, you meet her. She's dying in a rural hospital, and there's a young boy named David who's sitting beside her trying to help her work through what has happened. So they go through some memories of what happened. There's a lot of like family stuff and like agricultural pesticide stuff. And it's just a really super engaging, super interesting book. And it was long listed for the Man Booker International. The other two books were Convenience Store Woman and Enormous Changes at the Last Minute by Grace Paley. But those will be in the show notes.
Convenience Store Woman is on my list to read as well. I've heard a lot of good things about it.
It's excellent.
Okay.
Bring us home, RJ.
So I also chose a book.
On this podcast? No.
I like how we left them for last.
We did, yeah. This is other stuff. We talk about books all the time. Technically, what I chose is a zine. It's a fairly long zine, though. It is about a little over 100 pages. But it is a self-published zine that I read in PDF format. It's available on Itch. It is Napkin by Carta Monier. And it is really going to be some practice for talking about the genre we're reading in September, which are we allowed to say that we select genres in advance to give ourselves some time?
Yeah, go for it. We didn't used to do that, but now we definitely, to like manage our lives, have to do that.
Yeah.
The genre spreadsheet is publicly available.
Yeah.
So if anyone really wants to look at it, they can.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
It's just linked from our website, I think.
So don't put anything in there that you don't want the public to see. yeah, so our genre for September that we're going to be talking about in October is erotica. And so Napkin by Carta Monier is, I would classify it as an erotic memoir. It would not count for our erotica episode because it is nonfiction, but it is part photo book. There's lots of nudity. This is an 18 plus zine / ebook. It is a memoir about navigating her sex life, and as part of making it, distributed comment cards to all of her sex partners and let them know that it was going to be part of a zine. But so throughout the zine, along with her like personal stories and photographs of her, there's also all of these little comment cards that people have filled out that are like, you know, was this your first time having sex with Carta? Was Carta the first trans woman you've ever had sex with? Would you have sex with Carta again? Please leave additional comments below.
I have to admit that is like so kind of appealing. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I would definitely love to do like, you know, qualitative data and quantitative data about that.
To do a spreadsheet of...
Yes.
For sure, yeah.
But also, do not want to do that at all. So...
Yeah, and besides just being, like, kind of a fun thing and kind of high concept and obviously, like, a selling point of the zine, was also a way for her to write about sex without feeling like it was all one-sided. Like, she was going to be writing about all of these intimate experiences that she shared with other people, and it was a way to bring their voices into it in, like, an anonymized and fun way. And I really enjoyed it. It's very, like, I mean, it's funny, and it's sweet, and insightful, and I would recommend it. Napkin by Cardamonier.
All right. I guess that wraps it up for this episode of whatever other media we have been consuming that has not been for the podcast. Meanwhile, in the background, Matthew has been getting what we have termed our spider-catching cup out of the bedroom. And run around and caught a spider, because there's so many of them here that it's now his, like, regular job to catch spiders and put them outside.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. Outro.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Like, rate, subscribe, leave a review. Thanks so much.
For all of our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/bookclub4m, and find us on Twitter or Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to the things that we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre book list of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out to do this on our website. No promises in reading your suggestion, but we will give you a recommendation if you ask for one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesdays of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, September 7th, when we'll be talking about the format of flash fiction.
Then on Tuesday, September 21st, we'll be reading and discussing Piranesi by Susanna Clarke.
Yay!
The winner of our Battle of the Books.
So you can add that, like helicopter noise in as part of the, like, intro-outro experience for our podcast listeners this time.
I think I'll avoid doing that.
I think it would be great.
The helicopter noise?
A helicopter flew past us.
Yeah.
Oh. Very loud.
I didn't even notice.
It turns out we did not close the window. We have the window blinds down, shit, but the window is not closed. So the noises from outside have been a little distinct during the course of this episode. And yeah, the helicopter got well recorded on the...
Yeah, those blinds just don't really work as noise blockers, do they?
Not so much.
Matthew's like reminding me to introduce myself as if I would forget at this point.
We've had a nice, juicy, like, 30 seconds of radio silence.
I know, we have. I'm always wondering if, like, somebody else will do their intro first instead of having me talk again right away. But, like, usually it just seems to be, like, having a talk again. It's just an easier flow process.
And the easel sitting on, like, I'm going to have to say this again because I have to go stop my cats from doing murders to each other. 1 second.
Perfect end of episode content. RJ, thank you. Anyway, unimportant. This section's getting cut out.
Unrelated. Yeah, we're running long, and I've only said one of my three things. Oh, our call ends in 5 minutes.
I forgot about that.
That was the cat.
Is called. Hold on. Come on, internet.
I'd read that book.
Yes, yes.
I can do it. For our... Bup.
Can you, RJ? Can you?
No. Turns out I can't.
Do, 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 do. Okay, stop.